In order to get some checks of this prediction from strong coupling, partly about which Romuald was speaking during the previous talk, and probably there will be some other talks today. Should be okay. No. Okay. Yeah. So before I start speaking about three-point functions, since I'm going to speak about some kind of match between weak coupling and strong coupling, I want to remind you how it happens for the two-point functions first. So what we are considering here is, of course, n equals 4 super Young Mills. And I will mainly concentrate on the SU2 sector, so operators of the type X, Z, so Z, then some X at some point, and 1, say, and then some C of Z's, some X at the point, and 2. So I'm mainly in SU2 sector, and the absorbable we want to consider is some operator of this type, of the trace, and another operator conjugate. So, and as we know very well, for the two-point function, it's always possible to choose a basis in such a way that this two-point function is equal to some function of delta, which is anomalous dimension. It is a function of lambda. But for that, however, we have to consider some particular linear combinations of the single trace operator. So in particular, for two axes, I have to consider some wave function. And then this wave function is actually a non-trivial function of lambda, and it can be found in perturbation theory, and also delta is some non-trivial function, and so at the moment it is very well understood how it can be computed. So but let me put here star for the talk of Sergei. So we'll speak about extreme weak coupling limit, and the first non-trivial order for two coupling and for two-point function is a one-loop order. And at one-loop order, this wave function can be written explicitly. So it is just, roughly speaking, a plane wave, P1. Yeah, sorry, I forgot to mention that if you saw this talk before, don't worry, because at the end I will show some funny pictures. Yeah, so it's worth waiting. And then some S matrix, which also depends on the momenta. And the wave function with interchanged momenta. And in general, if you have like n magnons, m axis in the background of this, we should have like m factorial terms in the wave function. Okay, so once you have this wave function, the eigenvalues, of course, you know very well. We introduce a rapidity variable, which is the cotange of the momenta. And then the spectral equation at one loop reduces to a bit ansatz. And so what we see is that in order to specify a state, we have to find the solution of this bit-ansatz equation, which will give us some set of beta roots. So in the language of the bit-ansatz approach, the states, there are some sets of beta roots. And one has to solve the bit-ansatz equation, and in general it's very complicated problem if you have like L and M not equal to 1. However, there is a particularly important limit where the story simplifies dramatically, which is called the scaling limit. So the scaling limit is a limit when the number of M's, so the number of X's, scales with the length of operator L. And also, we have to consider solutions for which the beta roots also scale like the length, and all of them go to infinity. Okay, it's known that there are such solutions. It's, and the physical meaning is quite clear, because if we now compute PI from this formula, then we see that the momentum of each magnon scales as 1 over L. And this means that, like, wavelength is a order of the length of the operator. So in the spin chain picture, you have this very long waves of spins. And so in this limit, what you should expect is that the discreteness of the system shouldn't matter much, and you should get some simplification. And indeed, first of all, you observe that when you solve the bit-ansatz equation, the roots, they form some nice complexes, so they belong to some cuts, which you can find analytically. That's first thing you observe. And another thing is that the wave function actually simplifies, and instead of m factorial terms, you can all pack them into one single trace. So it will be trace of product of cosine theta I times x plus e to the I sine theta I times z, where theta I and phi I, these are very slow variant functions of I. So this phi I, so it varies at the scale of L. And now another thing, so I said this cuts are something you can compute analytically, and the way you do it, you introduce some functions which are called quasi-momenta in the following way, if I am not... And then after that you observe that in the limit when m goes to infinity, this root, they condense, and instead of a set of poles, you will find some cut. And then this Q is actually has some branch points, and apparently there is a pole at zero. And then this branch point, they like, okay, sorry. It should be something like this. They will connect different sheets of this surface. So one is Q, another is minus Q. So that is what happens at weak coupling. And also, I forgot to mention that energy of the state, the delta, then is given by L plus some, what is it? So, sorry, I'm missing some coefficients, which I usually do. And then you see that this delta, it has some classical three-level part, which is just length of the operator, and then there are some one-loop corrections and so on. Okay. Now, at strong coupling, So what is pretty amazing that this one loop results, they actually know something about strong coupling part of the correspondence, and namely about some classical strings. And the states which are due to this one, these are some states in S5 or S3. Okay, let me consider this S5. And then I can parameterize S5 as a, by three complex parameters, three complex functions with a condition that square is equal to 1. And then in EDS, this is a trivial linear function. So this T going around. And this kappa is nothing but, again, the anomalous dimension, but this time it's strong coupling. So this delta over square root of lambda. And so now instead of the states and wave functions and the operators, what we have is a set of classical solutions. And the equations of motion, so you can find them easily with, again, some sign missing, probably minus, doesn't matter. So the states are classical solutions. They are solutions of this two-dimensional nonlinear differential equation. And it looks quite complicated. However, what's nice is that these equations are integrable, and this implies that they exist such function A of some new complex parameter, X, such that it is a flat connection, so that the field strength is equal to 0. And then, since this is true, I can consider, so this is kind of important for what follows, monodromy matrix going around the Wolfschmidt cylinder. And then, since it is a flat connection, what we can deduce from this is that this object is a monodromy matrix. It doesn't, so it's spectral invariant data. Its trace, for example, it doesn't depend on time, on equations of motion. So because only due to equations of motion, this connection is flat. So the eigenvalues, so eigenvalues of omega, they give integrals of motion. And since we have here a complex parameter X, we can expand on Taylor series, and we get infinitely many integrals of motion in general. And so let me introduce this eigenvalues. Let me denote this by lambda. It's eigenvalue of monodromy matrix, and so it is a solution of this equation, in other words. And since, I mean, it is some polynomial equation, in principle, you get some branch cuts while solving it. And again, you get some algebraic curve, which is lambda and 1 over lambda. But this time, it's a little bit different. But otherwise, very similar to what we get at weak coupling. So, however, there is a very nice limit, which is called Frolov-Saitlin limit, where this picture can be exactly mapped to this picture. So for that, we have to consider some special class of solution. So consider and take limit L or kappa much bigger than 1. And the class of solutions I want to consider is, is U I equal to minus to I kappa tau, then some V I of sigma and tau. And so what I want to say is that when kappa goes to infinity, this embedding coordinate U, the main dependence on time is concentrated in this exponent. And otherwise, this function is a very slow function of time, which means that kappa d tau u is of order of d sigma u is of order of 1. So we just focus on this particular type of solutions, and there are infinitely many of such solutions which have this behavior. And now, can you still see here? To erase. So let me take this part. Now the delta, the anomalous dimension, which is just energy corresponding to this solution, so it is some kappa times square root of lambda. In general, this delta is a function of square root of lambda and L. And then in this limit, it is easy to see that kappa actually scales as a square root of as L over square root of lambda, where L is a momenta in S5. And then if I expand the classical energy, the expansion will look as follows. So it starts from square root of lambda, and then I have some function of ratio lambda to square root of lambda. And so there is some coefficient A times square root of lambda plus B, this L over square root of lambda to minus 1, and so on. So I'm expanding here with respect to the ratio of L over square root of lambda, the classical energy, for this particular type of solutions. And then what we see, if we now open brackets, is that A times L, and actually this A is equal to 1, plus lambda over L times B, and so on. So what we see is that this expansion of classical energy, it actually mimics somehow the perturbation theory expansion at weak coupling. Yeah, now I'm at one loop, so I hope I can.
Is this three? You hear me? The three loop discrepancy actually goes back to one loop and even below one loop. If you would just be a bit more careful in the string theory.
Well, so it's three loop discrepancy, right, at weak coupling. Okay, maybe you can explain. But in all cases which I'm going to consider, this B is actually perfectly matches the large L expansion of anomalous dimension of one loop. No, this is just an observation. Huh? No, this is just a fact about the theory which we are going to consider. ADS 50. So delta is the same object at weak and strong coupling. Of course, there are some issues with the order of limits when you expand at first in L and then in lambda, or you do the opposite expansion. But the observation is, if you do this procedure for this kind of solutions, what you get here is exactly the same result which you will get from one loop Betanzos equation. Do you have some counterexamples where it happens for some solutions which are of this type?
What is it good for?
Huh?
What is it good for?
What?
I mean,
what is good for?
No, we've had this years before.
No, any relation which we can observe is good for something.
There seems to be a coincidence between the two, and maybe there's a way to define it, but I mean, this doesn't tell you anything about the physics.
We observe some structure for two-point functions, and now we want to explore whether the structure is also true for three-point functions. Okay? This is just some guiding principle, which we do some observation at for two-point function. Now we want to see whether the same is true for three-point function. Well, first of all, it's non-trivial that it is true, but this is a fact. Okay. I mean, I don't understand the question, what it is good for. I mean, any relation you can find in the theory, like, I don't know, delta is equal to zero or something, is useful for something. It, in the framework of, so in principle, we have complete control on the spectrum, right? We have asymptotic bit on that and so on. So in principle, we can compute exactly this function delta, the function of L and lambda, and then study it. It's the various expansions. And that's what we find. This you can prove based on the bit on that. So maybe no one did it because it's kind of clear what should happen, but maybe it's a good exercise for someone. Yeah, so you can continue to the next order, but as Nico said, this will stop at three loops. And at minus one loops as well, apparently. Okay, so there is this observation. And so first thing which matches is that the anomalous dimension at one loop is related to classical energy in string theory, but actually for our needs we can observe even more, that even the wave functions they match to some extent of rigorous, of course, and so how it happens is the following, that this coefficient here is nothing but this function, one component of function u at the point I over L. And this coefficient here is nothing but u2 at the point I over L. Oh, yes. That was very smart to change notations. And then you see, once you know, like, classical solution and strong coupling, then actually you know more or less precisely in some limit, what does it correspond to which state at weak coupling. So it's not only the spectrum which matches experimentally, but also the wave function. And finally, also what happens with the curve is the following, that in this limit, you can rescale your x in such a way that these two poles, they go together, and actually this curve also matches the algebraic curve. So the wall integrability structure matches between weak and strong coupling. When did I start? Okay. So now, this was like just a reminder. I didn't expect something new will arise at this point. Yes? Ah, okay. Good. Because why? No, I'm not at this level of detailization, I'm afraid. Well, so Now, so now I'm going to consider three-point functions, and the first non-trivial order at weak coupling now is not a one loop, but three level. So it's a great advantage. And the reason for this is that the states which we have to take into account, they are already very non-trivial. This is, if you want, a perturbation theory in degenerate spectrum. So we have to take exact beta states, O1, O2, and O3, at the point X, Y, Z. So these are small letters. And then, as I said, O1 is some trace, some sum of traces of X and Z. So I take these three operators. So this is O1, O2, O3. And now, in order not to get zero, because we know that the only non-zero propagators are between X and X bar. So if I want to have something non-trivial, so I'm also in the planar limit, of course, I have to put here X bar and Z bar. So, and this will have two types of propagators, X to X bar and Z to Z bar. And then here I can put, say, Z at X bar. So it's only Z can propagate here. And then only X is here. Okay, so the simplest non-trivial case which one can consider, which is not, okay. So you see, I have to replace some X and Z's by X bars, Z bars, but otherwise, I just take the previous states, which is a combination of M factorial terms each, and I have to compute all possible three-level contractions of them. Yes. So each spin chain, at each point of space, there is a spin chain. So this operator, so the spin chain, there is no X and Y dependence, just it appears in the propagators, because this propagator is like X minus Y squared. Okay, but tensor structure, which is contained in spin chain, doesn't have any X dependence, of course. Okay, so there is a separation between spatial part and tensor part. Spatial part is a kind of trivial, it's just X minus Y squared, and the tensor part is contained in this beta wave function. Okay, so we have these three states, and each of them, as I explained, is parameterized by a set of beta roots. So I have to introduce three sets of beta roots. Okay. And then, my three-point function will depend on these three sets of beta roots. So C, I have to find C1 to 3, which is a function of I1, A, of all these three sets. Okay, and then generally it is a, so as I said, each term, it contains M factorial terms. And in principle, you get like, something about M factorial square combinations of them. So it's especially since we are aiming to take this limit where M goes to infinity, this is a highly complicated problem. And what helps is to use here some elements used in correlation function in spin chains, some contractions of off-shell beta states to write this expression, which is highly more efficient than just making the contractions by hands. So there is a huge increase of efficiency when you do this explicit expression, and this is what we did in our first paper with Pedro Amint and George. Okay. However, still, this is a quite hard function, a quite complicated function, and I will show some simple case. It will be case two. But now let me consider the case which was studied at strong coupling. Is it a proper thing to do? It's too good to be true. So the case which was studied and more or less the only case which was rigorously computed at strong coupling is the case of heavy light. This is the case when two operators are almost equal to each other up to conjugation. And the sort operator is very short. Short and BPS. And in this case, you have a picture like this. So you have two very classical long operators. So it's L goes to infinity. And then some very small operator like trace of xz, for example. Then you have to compute this contraction. So essentially, this is like a small deviation from two-point function, in some sense. And let us compute it using the coherent states instead of using this exact formula. Because we know that in the limit, in the strong coupling, in the limit where L goes to infinity, in the scaling limit, this m factorial term, they combine just in a single wave function. So I can write O1 is trace of like U1 of 1 over U times X plus U2 L Z times U1 2 over L X. So I'm not going to write to the end, as you can guess. And then some other terms. This will be O1. And O2, as I said, is roughly a conjugate. So 1 bar x bar minus plus u2 bar z bar, then u1 bar x bar u2 bar z. And all three, let's take the simplest possibility, just trace of x z. Okay. Now I just have to do all contractions, so let me contract this with this one, this with this one, and then remain ones I have to pair between each other. And then you see that this contraction actually gives 1, just because u1, u1 bar plus u2, u2 bar is equal to 1. So the main bulk of all these contractions here is just given 1. And then the remaining ones is just these two contractions. They are very easy to compute. And so what I get is u1 of 1 over L times u2 bar 1 over L. And now, in principle, I have to sum over all possible ways I can do this contraction. So it could be not necessarily 1, but it is some I. And I sum over I from 1 to L. And since it is some slow function, I can just replace the sum by an integral, sigma, 2 bar, sigma. And that's what I get for three-point function, just from this simple consideration. Okay. So can I switch, please, to computer? One, two, three. Could you please switch to computer? Thank you. Okay. So we get this result analytically, right? But in principle, we have this expression, which is exact. And we can solve Bittanzat's equation numerically with the arbitrary precision. And then these are the points which we get from this numerics. So different colors correspond to like different parameters and to different filling fractions. So for example, once you get this data, you are very disappointed because these blue dots, they should approach this line. And this yellow one, they should approach this one. And so it looks very bad. However, once you use this nice function, Mathematica, what you get is these curves. And you see the approaches very, very precisely our analytic prediction with a huge precision. And let me mention that if you do this contraction by hand, so you see here the maximal number of magnets is 14. So you should do, if you do this in the direct way, you should do 14 square contractions, which is like 10 to the 22. Okay, but even this is already big enough. And even if you use this simplified formula, it takes like 10 hours of 8 kernel computation to generate this set of data. And then what you get is simply this result. And now let's see what gives a strong coupling. So this is what you have to have in mind when you do strong coupling calculation. And so you have this classical string and then some tiny propagator of BPS string. And then the result is a two-dimensional integral. In principle, it is the integral over the worksheet over the point where this propagator is inserted. However, now we have to take the limit kappa goes to infinity, and this limit, you see, that this term disappears, and moreover, this cosh gives you nothing but something like a delta function. So it's a very localized function, 1 over cosh square. And this allows you to get rid of this integration in tau. And what you get is exactly this result which we get at weak coupling. So indeed, this concept of applying this classical, quasi-classical scaling limit for the three-point function, it apparently works. And actually, we can learn something more about strong coupling from this approach. Namely, there is the following subtlety in the calculation at strong coupling, that you know at weak coupling that these operators, they can be precisely conjugate to each other just because O1 should contain at least several more axes. So there are several more beta roots involved, and then there are various possibilities where to put these beta roots. So you can find solution where this beta roots is in the already open cut. So you just add some beta root here. This is a case. It's not this case. So you can put beta root at infinity, or you can put the beta root to some other location. So you can always find solutions with this property. So there are three cases, essentially. One is like global symmetry transformation corresponding to root at infinity. This is like quantum fluctuation when you put root somewhere outside the main cut, and roughly speaking, zero mode when you just increase already existing cut. And then what we find is that numerically, since we have exact results, the behavior in these three cases is very different. And in this case A, for example, the three-point function does not approach some constant value, so there is no limit, but rather it decays as some power of J. So apparently this can't match the strong coupling calculation. And also in this case, you get something similar. And the only case which actually matches the strong coupling result is this one. So this is like an indication that calculation and strong coupling should be actually specified, and one should say explicitly for which three states this calculation is valid, and it could be that it is not valid for all possible fluctuations, though semi-classically this seems counterintuitive because it's like a tiny tiny thing, which you add when you add one extra root. Nevertheless, for the three-point function, it's very different. The result, the behavior of the result changes dramatically. Okay, do I have 5 minutes?
Good.
So, we see this recoupling three-level calculation is relatively simple, and at the same time, it gives us some non-trivial information about strong coupling, and we are able to specify more details about the validity range of the existing strong coupling calculations. And so it's very important now to make some predictions for the calculation which Yannick explained in the previous talk. And the simplest case when you have three heavy, so in this case one was very short and it was very degenerate, but the first non-degenerate case is when the simplest one is when the classical solution decays into two very long BPS operators. Of course, classical solution can decay into some short operators, right, just because of the conservation of quantum numbers, so they must be some long operators. And for this case, we found an explicit expression for tree contraction, and the structure is the following. So it is a function of beta roots and of the length, and not of the total length of the operator, but rather of a part which is contracted with one of the BPS operators. So there is some asymmetry in this choice of X and Z. And what you have to do, you have to take your beta roots and divide them into two subgroups, alpha and alpha bar, and you have to do this in all possible ways. I denote this, this different groups of roots by different colors. And so I have to compute the sum over all possible ways the set of beta roots is divided into two subgroups. And then the expression I have to sum is given by this relatively simple formula. So at two-point functions, this kind, now we have to take a continuous limit where the number of beta roots goes to infinity. And for two-point functions, this was relatively simple to do. You just have to use this resolvents at the toll. But here, this kind of sums, they never appeared for two loops. And the way you do the strong coupling expansion, oh, sorry, not strong coupling, the continuous limit of this sum is by rewriting this as a path integral. And motivation is that it looks pretty much like some partition function, because I sum over all possible occupations of like by blue and red dots. And the natural thing to write is to write it as a sum path integral over all possible configurations of densities. So in the continuum limit, it should be some smooth density of blue dots and red dots, hopefully. And then we write this path integral. And then there is, of course, constraints that some of this density should be equal to the total density. Then there should be some measure due to the combinatoric, because once you fix some global configuration of roots, in principle, there is some measure factor which tells you how many such configurations exist. And then you rewrite this thing as just in the standard way in terms of density. So, for example, this term, if you take log, it will become just this integral with density rho b. Rho b is density of the roots, of the red roots. Okay, and then the first thing, the non-trivial thing is this measure, of course. And the first guess is to take something like rho, log rho, which is the standard expression for the entropy of ideal gas, for example, and this is the same measure which appears in TBA, which is just a steering formula for binomial coefficients. However, this is not true, and the reason for that is that there is a singularity between U's and V's. So if you regularize this singularity, then indeed this integral will give you the correct result. And so what we found that instead of this simple combinatoric measure, you have to add some more complicated terms here. And so it looks quite messy. But next step, what you should do is to take saddle point of this path integral to see which configuration of roots saturate this integral. And actually, the result then is quite easy. You then have to compute the section of the saddle point, and the result is given purely in terms of the quasi-momenta. However, it's not the full quasi-momenta, but slightly modified one. Not the full length appears here, but this shorter length. And so, in principle, our dream is now to be able to write a general three-point functions just purely in terms of the quasi-momenta of these three solutions. And this is, I hope, the way Romald is also trying to do this. And this structure of expression is very suggestive because it looks pretty much like some, I don't know, fermionic partition function. And also, it's strong coupling. It's very appealing to say that you should replace this single pole just by two poles, and hopefully this will be the correct way of generalizing this to the full classical strong coupling result. Okay, and finally, so instead of conclusions, I have more useful slide with references, and thank you.